Welcome to Factum Agri, dedicated to New Zealand's primary industry. Each week, I talk with farmers and growers, industry, the science community, and policy makers to hear their news and views on matters relevant to both our rural and our urban communities. This week on Factum Agri, Project Coordinator Craig Simpson from Otago South Rivercare joins me to discuss what's happening within their catchment groups on water quality improvement. He joins me now. Hello, Craig. Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Please, can you tell me a bit about yourself and your involvement with Otago Rivercare South?
Yeah, so I've worked with catchment groups for about the last 10 years. Previous role was with New Zealand Landcare Trust, and kind of started off there doing some project coordination work for the Pomahaka Watercare Group. Mm-hmm. And then it was 2.5 years ago, we have this project through Otago South Rivercare that's kicked off. It's a sustainable farm, sustainable food and fibres future fund, mm-hmm. Which was a 3-year fund. Yep. And so, yeah, I've been doing the project coordination alongside my colleague Rebecca Begg for that project for the last 2.5 years. Yeah,
good one. Now, each catchment group differs slightly in terms of structure and activity based on community goals in the area they operate in. Can you tell me about the structure of your catchment group and some of the programs you are doing?
Yeah, so Otago South Rivercare really is what we would probably call a catchment collective. So it's like a kind of an oversight of a bunch of catchment groups that work in the Clutha district in South Otago. So there's 7 catchment groups, and Otago South Rivercare kind of has a little bit of an oversight, has the funding for our current project. And what we do is within each group, each group will have their own kind of goals and directions that they're trying to head towards, and things that they're trying to tick off. So some might be interested in, for instance, what's the interaction between freshwater and saltwater? Mm. And others might be more interested in what's the, you know, helping the giant kokopu populations in their kind of particular catchments. Mm. So, yeah, they all kind of operate a little bit differently, or to have a slightly different direction, but all together kind of under Otago South Rivercare, we're all kind of all about improving the environment.
So what are some of the programs that are on the go at the moment?
Yep, so we've got the giant kokopu kind of restoration work in the Lake Tuakatoko catchment area. Mm. We've got a lot of kind of areas. So the Awaka area or the Catlins catchment group, they're doing a lot around pest management, so possum control.
Yep.
And whereas other groups are more just looking at kind of improving water quality, you know, it just as an overview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is that mostly involved with planting native species and perhaps in some cases bringing fences back off waterways?
Yeah, so through our project, we had earmarked that we would do 30 Ks of riparian planting. Mm. Throughout our 3 years, and that's kind of throughout the whole Otago South area. Mm. And we had earmarked a bunch of wetland restoration work that we would do. So we've been doing quite a lot of that. And I think to date we've planted about 44,000 native plants. Wow. And I think we've done 24 Ks of riparian planting so far. Mm. I mean, by the end of the project, obviously we want to hit the 30 K mark. We've done a whole lot of wetland restoration as well. I can't quite remember the numbers offhand, but we've put in a lot of native plants and whole lot of kind of mitigation measures just to try and help the environment, and you know, particularly with a focus in water quality, but not just, depending on the kind of catchment group and what their goals and ambitions are.
Sure. What has the engagement been like with farmers that you work with?
We've had good engagement with farmers in some areas. In other areas, you know, it's still working on things a little bit. It's just been because our project's quite broad. We have a range of kind of activities that we're doing. So as I mentioned before, ranging from the riparian planting and that kind of thing to we're kind of holding like Mr. Whippy tours, just kind of with the aim of kind of getting farmers off farm for a little bit, just to have a yarn with their neighbours. We've also kind of had some kind of speaker events where we might be discussing the latest research and that kind of thing. So engagement's, because it's such a large area, it's always a wee bit hard to tell, but it depends on the kind of topic.
Sure.
And where we're kind of holding them. Mm. But as a general rule, engagement's, we're probably exceeding our expectations of the project initially, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's good.
But with the caveat that there's a couple of areas that, you know, it'll be cool to, well, we just keep working away. And yeah, it's a 3-year project. It's kind of tricky, you know, just to, you know, you're just kind of getting going and then you're starting to wrap up a little bit. So
yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's a, we've got to play the long game here. And just see how things pan out. But you know, project funding, I mean, it's a real awesome thing. It's a great opportunity for catchment farmers, but it can be, you know, you've got a lot of deliverables to meet, right? So there can be some negative downsides to having these projects as well.
Yeah, for sure. And look, there is so much good work being done by catchment groups right around the country. And I talked to many people that are involved with them, and it's superb to hear what's going on. And you've sort of touched on measurables. Are there any measurables or outcomes from the work you have done that you are noticing or perhaps seeing?
I think some of the measurables are in, you know, those metrics we were talking about with native plants and wetland areas restored and that type of thing. As far as water quality parameters go, we're not going to really see that. It's way too short a time. And in some areas, actually, we're really just kind of investigating what we have. It's almost like a more of a baseline as to what is there, what fish live there, for instance, and what kind of invertebrates live there, that type of thing. And it really is going to take a long time to see any progress. But, you know, I think what we can say is we're heading in the right direction by just raising awareness of, you know, for instance, what fish live in a stream can actually be a real motivator for a landowner or a group of landowners to kind of take action to say, oh, well, this is actually a special species in New Zealand, and let's take a bit of care to just to keep on the good work, because they're obviously here, so we're doing a good job anyway. But you know, what else can we do to help that population? So you know, hard to say in terms of water quality parameters, but yeah, there's a lot of kind of awareness raising that we've been doing, which has been like really awesome. The other one that we've been been quite a cool aspect of our project has been understanding the kind of cultural history of some of the areas in Otago South. And so we've had a cultural tour talking about like some of the sites of significance to Mana Whenua. And then we're currently just producing 3 short videos that'll kind of go up on the website in the next couple of months.
Cool.
That are going to help to share that story as well. So that's pretty cool from the social perspective. Yeah,
for sure. So do you think this work with the riparian planting and just, you know, looking at the water quality, I think in terms of pest control, well, that's probably quite easily measured, I would imagine. But in terms of water quality, are we looking at sort of 20 years, 30 years until we start to see some actual measurables in terms of water quality improvement?
I think at times, yes. At times we could see an improvement, and it would very much depend on the scale of a site. But you know, if you're wanting to be, you know, if you're kind of trying to be scientifically robust, we're talking 20-year timeframes. However, like if you have stock crossings that, you know, they're fording rivers, and you put in a culvert, you could see an improvement like quite quickly. In the downstream kind of community, so macroinvertebrate communities or water quality parameters. Generally, when we're talking with like regional council state of the environment monitoring, we are looking out to the 20-year timeframes to you know, just be sure of those trends and that they're robust.
Because so
that's why it's always tricky, isn't it, to when we ask questions.
And I 100% get that, you know, because a lot of people listening will be saying, look, all this work is fantastic and we can see that there will be benefits, but you know, in terms of seeing improvements to water quality, you know, how long is this going to take until we start to see that from an evidence perspective? And I guess the answer is, as you've just said, it's going to take some time, and it could be 20, 30 years before we see some real material benefit to all the hard work that's going on currently.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And but as just with that, you know, that other example I had is that you might see it on a smaller scale. But that probably won't be reflected in the regional council's state of the environment stuff at that scale. So then you're heading back to the 20-year timeframes.
Hey, does technology play a role in the work that you do in a general sense?
We use a whole lot of mapping to help us with, you know, kind of figuring out sites of significance, critical source areas and that type of stuff. We've also done, using technology a little bit with some drone work that we've been doing.
Okay.
So we've been, we've tried seeding some gully areas with drones, so using native plants with using drone technology to spread the seeds, and then we've been using drones to spray over the small plants.
Yep.
And to keep as a weed control measure. So that's actually been a pretty cool aspect of our project. Something we kind of continuing to monitor, but a little bit early to comment too much, other than to say that it works fairly well. We want to do kind of a cost analysis of how much it would be to seed a gully with drones versus, you know, planting them with native stems, and and then, you know, what's the cost recovery there, and what's the financial implications to do it that way. But looks as if it would be a lot cheaper if you can get them going.
Yeah.
So that could be a good learning coming out of our project. But we will be working on a report in the new year to just figure that out.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, because it's the drone thing to me seems like a really interesting space, and we're starting to see that type of technology being used, I would say, sporadically or certainly in niche environments at the moment. But I think in a general sense for agriculture, drones seem to have large potential, but it hasn't quite been adopted or widely used yet, has it?
No, and I would say that's true of our project as well. We are kind of calling this a trial. And hoping to share the results and kind of say that, well, this works really well or otherwise. And, you know, with the hope that once people have seen it trialed and kind of proof of concept, that they might actually adopt it going forward. But it seems, I kind of agree, it feels kind of early on in that progression.
What about schools? Is there involvement from children within the work you do? Because obviously the children, and I hate to say it for want of a better word, but they are our future. They are the future of what farming and agriculture, and certainly, you know, they will be seeing the benefits of the work that catchment groups are doing.
Yep. So a big part of our project is actually working with the local schools.
Okay.
A lot of them is around stream health monitoring. So kind of getting them out in the beside a stream, teaching them how to monitor stream health and kind of looking beneath the water, so to speak, and at what lives there and why we might actually want to be protecting these kind of the aquatic ecosystem. We also have part of our project is in adopting a stream, so where the kids will go and we'll do the stream monitoring, and then we'll come in and do some planting.
Okay.
And we're kind of trying to measure over time, is the stream health improving? And what does that look like? And, and each year you can go back and see the vegetation growing. And, so that's a kind of a pretty cool hands-on thing we've been doing.
Yeah.
And then the final one, which has kind of been an interesting one. This was our committee at the start of the project. We're like, one of the things we'd like to include in the project is bringing our urban schools to the rural community.
Yep. I like
So we've
that.
run a couple of, yeah, it's been pretty cool. We've run a couple of farm days where we've taken schools from Dunedin, brought them down to South Otago, and we've kind of done things like, well, this last one, we had four schools from Dunedin down. And we got them to put up an electric fence. We got them to set up a water trough. They fed lambs. We did some stuff about fish and aquatic health. And we did a bit of planting as well, riparian planting. But yeah, they were just to kind of, because a lot of these guys hadn't been on a farm before. And just to give them a taste of, farm life and all that goes on there. So they were. Yeah, it's those kind of sessions have been really successful, and the schools are like really keen to come back, obviously. So, it's been a really cool interaction, actually. So, yeah, I think this year we've had that one day, and we took another couple of high schools to a couple of farmers who were doing regenerative farming. I think that was in October or November, and so that was actually quite cool as well. Just trying to give paint a bit of a picture of different types of farming that can be done and are being done in the South Otago area.
Yeah, it's really cool. Now, a lot of this work comes at great cost, and particularly to the farmer. Obviously, there are environmental benefits, but do you think farmers will get rewarded in the long run in terms of increased farm gate returns through improved sustainability?
Yeah, it's a tough one, Angus. I think, I mean, there's obviously currently there's a program, New Zealand FAP Plus, that a lot of farmers are signing up to. And as part of that program, you need to kind of show you're doing some environmental stewardship.
Yep.
And that it either equates to like preferential supply through your meat processor or potentially a higher per kilogram price. So that's kind of cool. What does that look like in the long term? I'm not 100% sure. I know that my colleague did her Kellogg's research on this kind of question, and it looks like it will ultimately be driven by the markets. And so, there's certainly a word out of Europe, that they are going to demand a good deal of environmental stewardship and production of your food. And so whether that comes back to a higher return on the table for farmers is, yeah, not, I guess it's not my decision to make, but probably the markets will drive that ultimately. I think what one thing I can definitely say though is the people who are, thinking about the environment, they're trying to be good stewards of the land, which most farmers are anyways. It won't be wasted, there's the peace of mind element, but hopefully in time, our processes will be getting us a better return for the products we produce in such an awesome, sustainable way.
Is there an end goal for catchment groups? And do they have a finite life, do you think?
Great question. A lot of the catchment groups I'm involved in and the Otago South Rivakea has as their kind of vision statement improving the health of their waterways and that kind of thing. So, that's a long-term goal. Whether it's, whether it's achieved or not is gonna, as we talked about before, we won't know for a long, many, many years. I think they're gonna go through ebbs and flows. So there's gonna be periods of high activity. For instance, in Otago South at the moment, we've got our big project. As I said before, that's coming to an end in start of July next year, 2024. So then we might be into a period of lower activity, depending on what else goes on in the interim. And so it feels to me that they're a good mechanism to get collective action. As long as they're kind of structured with a good strategy and a vision that and that they're working towards, if they actually achieve that, that would be awesome, right? But it feels like as well that it would be a shame to lose that kind of community. And it's more than likely that there'll be another iteration, whether it be predator control or whatever else it might be, that becomes the focus if they did in fact achieve their visions. So yeah, I guess it's a long way of saying it would depend on the catchment group. But to me, it seems like a good mechanism whereby, you can work together with your neighbours to try and achieve some good things, positive things.
I've really enjoyed chatting with you today. Really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Angus. Thanks for having us.
I think getting schools involved with catchment groups is a great idea. And as I mentioned earlier, they will be the ones inheriting the work being done now. So why not get them involved in school and be part of shaping the future? I feel like there is a significant change in the way not only farmers are engaging with the land, but also the wider community. It's happening as we speak, up and down the country. And yep, a tick for improving water quality programs and increased biodiversity. But in my mind, this also has to be reflected in increased farmgate returns. So this is the challenge for industry and our processes marketing our products internationally. We can feed 40 odd million people. So if we are striving to be the world leaders in sustainability, then the 40 million people we feed need to be the conscious consumer and who have the ability to pay for the privilege of what we grow in this country. And we should not be competing with the likes of Brazil or other nations who don't come close to the products we produce here. That's all from me this week. Thank you for listening and catch you next time.